I'm Kier from Gallifrey Public Radio, a Doctor Who fandom podcast and part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics. We're usually talking to guests about video games and comics and, you know, things that are nominally what's supposed to be talked about on the show. But in this one, I just have another cool creator talking about their cool stuff. This time, I have Mishiams, who has some beautiful art coming out in the recently released DC anthology, Wonderful Women of the World. Mishi, how are you doing today?
Hey y'all, thanks for having me. I'm doing cool and doing great. How are y'all?
I'm so excited to finally get to talk to you about this one. I know I've been trying to find a reason to get you on the show for a while, and I'm glad that this is going to be something kind of high profile that we get to do it for.
I know. This was extremely unexpected, but I'm super happy to be here and I'm excited to talk to you about all this.
So, how did you get pulled in for this one?
So, the magical world of Twitter. This happened completely by accident, and this was not something that I saw happening. But basically, I, back in June, I think it was sending out like tweets like, "Hey, I'm looking for work." Because of shenanigans with my day job, and sort of really wanting to start moving away from working, you know, full-time at a day job and working like three other jobs. So, I, you know, per chance, it was like 10 o'clock at night and I haphazardly tweeted that, you know, I do comics, I'd love to do more comic work, and I'm looking specifically for paid work. And I got an email from one of the senior editors for Young Reader, which is an imprint from DC Comics, and Christy Quinn is the name. And, you know, I, you know, was just sent an email inquiry and we sort of got talking, and Christy laid out sort of what the expectations was for this anthology, because it's a DC book for young readers, so it's not, you know, superhero focused, which I liked. It's more geared towards sort of like the theme of superheroics, but not so much applicable to superheroes. And sort of via the email chain, we sort of got talking. But how I got pulled into this was me haphazardly tweeting at like 8 o'clock at night, which tends to be a bad habit I keep doing. But yeah, that's the sort of short end of how I got pulled into this.
My insomnia is going to be good for something eventually, right?
Right, yeah. That's, you know, they say sometimes the best work you do is like late at night, but sometimes you get a surprise job opportunity also late at night, unexpectedly so. Maybe it does work out, but also please sleep and rest, because if you don't, you will quickly burn out and that's not good for you or anyone else. So yeah.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about this book, because honestly, I'm a little biased, and I'm sold just on the fact that you're in it.
Aw, that's super cool. Ends me. So basically, the book, Wonderful Women of the World, is an anthology, and it's featuring a lot of different creators, and creative folks. It's specifically focused on women from all over the world. It has a global sort of pool of folks who are being spotlighted from various marginalized communities. So, you know, you have Naomi Watanabe, you have Marsha P. Johnson, you have a mix of folks, you have Mary Copney. So you have a mix of, you know, historical women, women who have made a large impact in, you know, physics, you have climate change activists, you have disability activists, you have members of the LGBTQ community. So this book is really a kaleidoscope of various women and various creative teams and creative talents. And, you know, what I like about the book is that you can, you know, regardless of whichever page you turn to in the book, there's always going to be a visual feast for the eyes and a narrative that will resonate with you, you know, regardless of whatever page you're on. And I feel like this particular book has a lot of love poured into it, which is, you know, sort of why I really like it. And yeah, and I'm really thankful that I got to be a part of it.
When they asked you to be a part of this one, did they specifically ask you to be a part of it to look at someone specific, or did they kind of listen to you about who you would want to do work about?
So essentially, for, you know, the way that I was approached for this project in particular, I was sort of given a pool of, I think it was like four choices of like who I would be interested in, you know, doing the artwork for, because I, you know, it was a creative team, so it's a writer, an editor, a letterer, and an artist. And then I think some teams also had colorists if folks needed them. But because I was doing all of the artwork, I sort of did most of the like pencils, inks, colors, etc. But for this one, I was sort of given a pool of choices. I think I ended up doing Naomi Watanabe, because I guess that's how the cards fell into place. But like out of the list that I was given, she was the one that I really wanted to do, because I've been a fan of her for quite some time, and I always like seeing her in things, whether it's like advertisements or, you know, just specials that she does. And if you don't know who she is, she's a Japanese comedian and an activist, and she focuses a lot in terms of like body acceptance and positivity. And a lot of her work, and especially her fashion line, is focused on creating more accessible fashion for folks of all shapes and sizes. So yeah.
And I'm glad you got to work on somebody I don't know about, because you get to be my introduction to somebody, and I just think that's really cool.
She's really popular on Instagram, which is something I don't use that often, although I am on there. But I can't remember how I saw her work first, but I do remember it was like from one of her like comedy skits, because she sort of how she became like really well known is because she's a comedian, she does impersonations, and she got really popular because she would do lip sync challenges, but she would do them dressed as Beyonce.
Like for any song is Beyonce?
Yeah, yeah. Like she would dress up as Beyonce, and I don't remember what year it was, but one of the years that Beyonce came to Japan, they actually met on like one of the variety shows that Naomi was on as like a guest. Like just looking at things, she sort of, you know, became popular in like 2008. So, you know, from there, she's been in quite some a lot of things.
Well, now I just feel bad for not having heard of her sooner.
Yeah, she's also an actress, so yeah.
And it looks like some voice work as well, so let's just get completely well-rounded on everything.
Yeah, I'm like, damn.
This is really going to make me wish that I knew Japanese so I could go watch this Sailor Moon that it says she's going to be in, isn't it?
Yes. Well, she's in the new, the dub in the movies, which is on Netflix, so there's English subtitles, so you can definitely hear her.
Okay, yeah. Good.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
I'll just have to remember to watch in the morning so I don't fall asleep because I've been awake for too long. How much contact did you have with Jody Hauser while you guys were working on this one?
So a lot of the sort of pipeline was through the editor, so I really didn't work with Jody all too closely. Sort of process was in terms of like me, you know, getting the script and then like sending my work and then getting feedback back was mostly through the editor, not so much the writer, but I would get, you know, Jody's comments and feedback through the editor. Christy Quinn would sort of be like the go-between relay person between Jody and myself, and she really handled a lot of the, like, you know, comments from Jody, you know, what worked, what didn't work, because I was sort of given the first completed script relatively early in the, like, production process when I was onboarded, so it was sort of hit the ground running. And then between pencils and colors, there were like a few revisions that I made on my behalf, but otherwise I didn't really work super closely with the writer. It's mostly through the editor.
How does that compare with like other anthology work that you've done?
So in terms of other anthologies, a lot of the times it's either I'm writing and doing art, or I am working in close collaboration with a writer. So it's a lot more like constant talk, whether it's via Twitter or email or sometimes Discord. So a lot more, I want to say, very like production streamlined step by step, which was cool to see in terms of like how a publisher works versus like when it's self-publishing or indie, because I feel like with self-publishing or indie projects, you are, you know, sort of in constant contact with your collaborators, so it's a completely different vibe versus like working with a publisher. And also when you know of your collaborator, like I know Jody's work, but I have not personally interacted with Jody, so, you know, there's that level of, oh, this is, like, super professional, because, you know, this is a publication, right, from a big publisher, versus, like, you know, it's, like, two in the morning, and, you know, you and your writer or collaborator are, like, sending each other, you know, silly memes, because, you know, sometimes words, you sort of like lose your train of thought, and sometimes an image can, you know, say everything that you want to say. So yeah, it was definitely a different experience, but one that I think like really, you know, drew the curtain back for me, at least in terms of like how different companies approach the production process, which I thought was super neat.
With those pictures being able to say things better than words sometimes, would you consider it cheating if you went and drew out the perfect picture to send to them instead of having to go find it on the internet?
No, I don't think that's cheating. And actually for this, for the comic, for the anthology, I ended up, me and Christy, we ended up sort of, and Jody also had sent a lot of reference images for me to use, especially of Naomi's outfits and like stage presence. And while I was working on this project in particular, I was, you know, looking up, you know, going off of the resources that Jody had sent along my way, of, you know, like performances of Naomi, like sort of the stage presence that Naomi has, or like outfits. So we actually pulled from a lot of her photo shoots that I had used directly as references, in order to get this one, which actually sped up my process quite a bit, because when I do comics, I end up painting over the panels. So some folks break up their process where it's like, you have your pencils, you refine your pencils, you do your line art, then you do your flat colors, then you do your shading, and then you sort of wrap everything up. I do sort of the opposite, where I do my pencils slash rough lines, and then I clean things up, and then I paint over things. So my process is a little bit more take out and merge some steps together, as opposed to other folks. So having reference photos and having photos to work off of was extremely helpful. And if anyone says that, you know, using reference photos is cheating, that's a lie. Everyone uses reference photos. And it's a good way to train your eye and your hand when you're working on things like comics and art in general, because, you know, we can only see and imagine and visualize in our heads how a composition of a thing should work. But when you have, you know, a photo or something to go off of that crystallizes your idea, it's easier for you to then be like, oh cool, this is like the baseline, or this is what I want this thing to look like, so I'm gonna practice and keep, you know, working off of this until I get to that, until I'm comfortable in my skills to sort of freehand or, you know, draw this from memory, or, you know, move on from having to use a reference to not use a reference. But yeah, I would say having that perfect photo is not cheating at all.
Since this is looking at real people, how does it compare to the previous anthologies you've worked on?
So on one hand, it was a little bit harder for me in terms of like when you're working off of a thing that you made or a thing that's, you know, fictional in terms of like character designs. There's like elements and things you can do visually where it's like, oh, I can, like, you know, add in some special effects, or I can, you know, change things, and like it doesn't really matter how close the likeliness of this like fictional character is, because, you know, folks draw characters differently and stylistically, whereas when you're working with off of photos of real people, how you interpret them in your style is going to change quite a bit. So in some ways it's easier, right? Because you have photos, so you can directly reference things, as opposed to previous anthology work where I would be creating characters or storylines that are self-contained to the anthology or to the comic, where, you know, they sort of start and end in that little comic for that project. Whereas if it's a real person, you know, they exist separate outside. So it's figuring out how to reimagine this person so that it looks like them, but also stays true to your own artistic style, which for me is a little bit hard because I feel like my style changes every single time I draw something. So I don't really know if I have a consistent style.
Yeah, I guess being good isn't a consistent style.
I wish. But yeah, it's a lot harder because I know for me over the years, like I've been drawing for over a decade, but doing comics for, I want to say, on and off about like 5-ish, maybe 6-ish years. And like, I know I've definitely grown in terms of like the things I do and like the stories I tell through comics and sort of how I work with different panel compositions. But also like there, you know, little by little, you don't really know what sticks and what sort of changes in your art style until like you sort of take a pause and like look back and start comparing like, oh, when I was like, you know, like 4 years ago, I used to draw, you know, in this sort of style, and now I draw like, you know, there's some elements that I still keep, but otherwise like my style is completely different. So yeah.
Outside of your own pages, because that is an answer would just be way too much cheating. Which ones are you the most excited to see?
Okay, so there's quite a few, like out of all the pages, gosh, there's so many. So there's the one thing about this anthology in particular is that there's such a variety of styles that every single page is super like, super cool, extremely individualistic, and really captures the dynamic of like the creative teams. But it's so hard to choose. So I do want to say the teams behind Serena Williams, Super Serena. I'm like super excited to for folks to see that, as well as the pages for Malala Yousafzai, One for All. Just because I think the teams there are extremely cool. There's also, you know, like the anthology is divided up into five parts, and each part is made up of so many super cool teams that it's really hard to pick and choose which one, like which ones I'm excited for. And you know, not only do you have comics, you also have illustrations in this anthology, which I thought was a neat touch. So in terms of like what illustrations are you excited for, Bex Glendinning has a really cool Mary Seacole illustration, which I think is visually stunning. So yeah, I think if I had to choose three, those would be the three that I'm like super excited about. But actually my answer would be every single comic and page in the anthology is one that I'm excited for.
I mean, as cheesy as that sounds, that's about where I am, because it's full of people that I don't know much about. I mean, obviously I know who Beyonce is, and anybody who has paid attention over the past year or two knows who Greta Thunberg is. But outside of that, I'm coming in mostly blind. Like, I might have a vague idea on a few of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the cool thing is that, you know, there's also, you know, a lot of the times when it comes to anthologies, you know, even ones that focus on folks or, you know, activists from marginalized communities, oftentimes, you know, obviously an anthology can't encompass every single community and every single person, or, you know, no anthology can speak to the lived experiences of folks. But what I like about this one is that you do have representation not just from the subjects of the anthology, but also the creative teams of folks who have either, you know, are from the same communities as the folks that they're working on in terms of telling and writing comics for, or, you know, there's something that everyone can relate to in one way or another, which is what I like. And also you have folks who may not be super well known to, let's say, like a Western based audience, right? Or, you know, because there's an international scope, so that, you know, if they weren't popular or well known in the United States, and, you know, there are, I think a handful of like comics from indigenous creators. So, you know, it's really a sort of global scale. Like, you know, it's not just the same, you know, cookie cutter white folks, you know, like, it's very much so like, these are only just a handful of folks around the world who have made an impact in big ways and small. And sometimes, you know, we've seen this happen in history and whatnot, where it's like, you know, someone from a marginalized community made a discovery or has done research or was an activist or did something, but because they weren't a white cis heterosexual man, you know, they were sort of written off into the margins, right? So here you have this like glimpse of like, these are only just a handful of so many folks who have done something with, you know, during their lifetime, or if they're no longer with us, like afterwards, their impact. And if they are still with us, you know, if they're still making things, like, great. And if they're not, here's like a little glimpse of like what they have done and the impact that it has on, you know, readers and anyone who picks up this anthology.
To put it very lightly, DC has been kicking ass lately, I think, with
just a little tiny bit.
Kind of setting the bar for some other companies who are mm-hmm. also big like them and have kind of been going in the other direction in some ways that we're not going to get into right now.
Yeah. You're right. You know, I haven't worked with some of the other companies that, you know, were sort of slightly sad. But, you know, I do have to say that as a, you know, comic speaker, but also as a reader of comics, you know, watching DC, I want to say almost across the board, because even like on their TV front, in some cases, I do want to say, they have really shown that, you know, the industry and just in general, folks can say, you know, like, support marginalized creators, right? You know, the sort of wall that everyone seems to hit is that, you know, marginalized creators have been and always, you know, for as long as they can, will be making stuff. And if folks, you know, don't want to support them, then they can't be crying and saying, there's like, you know, I can't find a marginalized creator to support. We're here, like, there's so many folks who, you know, are doing amazing work, but because, you know, one way or another, you know, they're not getting the recognition that, quite frankly, they should be getting. But, you know, like, it's there. It's not, you know, comics isn't just the same old, for lack of a better term, like, boys club that, you know, so often it has been, or, you know, has been thought of. There's so many folks doing the work, and what I was genuinely surprised, in a very good way, was how, when I was approached for this project, it was made very, like, it was stated very explicitly that, like, the creators working on this project and the teams and even like the marketing department that, you know, not everyone identifies as a woman but is working on this anthology, and that's 100% totally acceptable and should be the norm, right? But, you know, sometimes when you have projects that focus on marginalized identities, whether it's, you know, from the publisher or whether it's, you know, from someone, there's sometimes this like disconnect where it's like folks seem to think they need to step on eggshells in order to welcome others to be a part of the team. And this was, I think, one of the first times where, you know, it was very right off the bat, like, we know, you know, you're a non-binary creator, and that you prefer, you know, these, you know, you prefer they, that pronouns, and we know there's sort of a bad trend of, like, people marketing things as, like, women and non-binary creatives, right? And it's sort of, like, non-binary is tacked on as, like, in air quotes, as, like, woman-like, when that's not the case, right? So, you know, I think DC has done an extremely good job in ways that surprises me, in a very good way of, like, you know, we know you are this sort of creator, or, and we have other creators who also identify with, you know, similar to you or have similar experiences as you. So, you know, tell us what makes you comfortable. Tell us, you know, how would you, like, in terms of, like, marketing, how would you like to be referred to as? Do you have a preferred name? Sort of, like, what is, you know, what are your preferred pronouns? Like, and if we market this book, like, our marketing team is aware, like, it's not just women working on this project, right? So I think they have been, you know, putting in the work, which, you know, in some cases it's like, really? Like, it's 2021 and we've only sort of got here and there's so many problems in the industry still, but, like, for a big company to, you know, try and do that work, especially since other companies have not been as charitable or have sort of put, you know, their foot in their mouth when it comes to working with marginalized creators. Yeah, I think they've really been, like, DC has really been killing it. So yeah, hopefully this means that we'll start to see an industry change. Hopefully. So yeah.
Me, as the cis straight white guy, definitely let me know what I can do, because I know that my role is not to jump out and try to be anything, but to make sure that y'all can get done what you need to get done.
Nah, you're good. But yeah, no, it's like, again, like, this isn't, like, it's in any sort of industry, right, where it's like, you, like, it's catered to a certain specific demographic for the longest time, right, and anyone else who doesn't fit into that demographic, like, sort of shit out of luck. And it's, you know, there's only so much we can do as marginalized creators to change the industry, but also it really shouldn't be on us to do all the work, right? It shouldn't, you know, when it comes to, like, racism in the industry, right, it shouldn't be on, like, Black and Indigenous and folks of color to, you know, educate white folks on, like, racism and, you know, why a certain thing is racist or why is it not, etc., etc., right? Like, it's, yeah, we can only do so much. And it's really, like, it needs to be all hands on deck.
It really makes me think more about, too, from the, just the reader side of things. When I went to the shop a few weeks ago, and the Aquaman miniseries had just come out. Like, I'm sitting there, and I've already paid for my stuff, and they're getting ready to close up. And one of the newer guys working there was talking about, oh, you know, so excited to finally get this Aquaman book. You know, they really need to, if they're going to make more books like that, then, you know, people need to buy it and show that they're willing to buy it. And that's exactly how he said it. So I'm sitting there, and I had kind of been out of things for a little bit. And it was, that whole day was a week in itself. And I'm asking him, like, okay, like, but what do you mean by that? And he kind of looks around to see who else is in the store and just whispers at me, he's gay. He's been in there enough with me, like, I think he knows exactly how seriously to take me now. And I kind of whisper back at him, it's me, you can say that without whispering. But just the fact that he felt like he had to look around and see who else was in there and make sure he wasn't gonna, like, cause any kind of ruckus with it, like, I just really wish that didn't have to happen.
Yeah, and, you know, that's sort of the thing where it's like, you know, sometimes I think, well, especially with this pandemic, it feels like everyone is online all the time, right? But also, like, sometimes the internet is really, you know, the only way you sort of find a connection to folks who, you know, are from the same community as you, right? Or, like, folks who, you know, think similarly to you, where it's like I'm not saying you specifically, but like where someone who, let's say at home, you know, they're not safe or they can't be out or whatever the circumstances, right? Like, you know, they don't have that level of support. And, you know, like social media has its own issues with like algorithms suppressing posts, right? So like you can be yelling off of the top of the mountain, you know, hey, if you're looking for like queer comics, right, or like LGBTQ focused comics, right, like here's a whole slew of creators who are doing that work. But sometimes if you can't find that work, right, or if it's not like, you know, as like as a creator, like there's only so many times I can like post or repost my stuff until I'm like, am I being annoying? But then I'll get a comment where it's like, wow, I haven't seen this before. Like, thanks for, you know, retweeting this, or like, thanks for posting this because I had no idea this existed. And that's sort of like the problem, right? Where it's like, if folks want to see more diverse books, you know, created by marginalized creators, for marginalized creators and beyond, right? Then it's like a marketing / visibility problem, right? Where it's like their stuff isn't being amplified versus others, right? And that's the thing where it's like, as you said, like, you know, when you're physically going into a shop, there's still that comic shop, there's still that attitude of like, you know, depending on what the shop is, but, you know, even for me, sometimes when I'll go into, like, one of the local comic shops near me, the attitude is still very much like, ugh, why, you know, what's all this, and I'm saying this with extreme sarcasm, like, what's all this, like, social justice books, right? Like, where's the good old-fashioned, like, comics that, like, certain folks grew up with it. It's like, well, that's boring. Like, why would you want to read about the same old, like, white straight dudes all the time? Like, is that not boring? Like, don't you want something else? Like, doesn't it get exhausting reading the same stuff over and over again? Why not, like, go beyond? Like, why not explore other folks and other, like, stories that you may not have heard or known about, right? Like, why not? Doesn't that make your, like, reading palette and, like, narrative experience better?
Well, let's try to wrap things up on a little bit of a happier note. Because the world doesn't completely suck. First off, who is your favorite Muppet?
Oh, God. That's such a hard question. Oh, goodness. Kermit just embodies so much of my soul, and sometimes the most perfect Kermit picture, like, says more than I can say in words, so I definitely have to say Kermit.
Muppet Show Kermit or Movie Kermit?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I want to say probably Movie Kermit.
See, I'm more of a Muppet Show Kermit person because I kind of like Asshole Kermit, but I also really like Rainbow Connection.
Yeah, see, they're both good. That's the thing.
They're like 1A and 1B. It doesn't really matter which one. I was just curious.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, if you could only eat one kind of cheese for the rest of your life, what kind of cheese would it be?
Wow. Why are you making me choose the hard things? God damn it.
Well, this one is because of the random question list.
I feel like your random questions are out to get me.
Well, I ask everybody the Muppet question. And people still can't decide because that's how hard it is, because they're all so wonderful.
That is true. I want to say my favorite cheese is Sulguni, which is Armenian Georgian cheese. Apparently has a nickname of pickled cheese. It's definitely not pickled. But anyways, that would be my favorite cheese.
I haven't heard of that one. Now I'm going to have to try to go hunt it down. I have no idea where I'd be able to do that around here.
If I could, I would mail you some. But I don't think that would be a good idea, considering cheese is perishable.
Well, if I ever end up close to where you are, I will let you know. We can go get some.
Yes, we totally should.
So, Mishiams, it has been great having you on here. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
You can find me all over on the internet. You can find me on Twitter at RequiemPluey. You can visit my shop at Mishiams.bigcartel.com. I'm on Instagram at Mishiams. But yeah, mostly on Twitter. Not hard to find. So yeah. Thank you for having me, and it's been an absolute blast.
Well, thank you for coming on. Thank you for having the wonderful art skills that you can share with the world. And as always, we will have links to all that stuff down in the show notes, because clicking links is so much easier than trying to remember how to spell things. As always, if you want to hear more from me, you can head on over to playcomics.com, where there's links to all the social media stuff, including Twitter, where I'm the most active, at PlayComicsCast. If you want to help support the show, you can head on over to playcomics.com/support, where there's links to all kinds of ways you can support the show. Most of those are, you know, monetarily, because money does help. But also, just shove the show into somebody else's ear holes with consent, because, you know, getting stuff stuck in your ear holes is probably not a good way to surprise somebody. But yes, please do that, as long as they're expecting it and are cool with it. Or, you know, just leave it down on the counter where they can find it later. That's cool, too. Don't forget that Play Comics is a part of the Gunna Geek Network, home to other just wonderfully geeky shows. Some of those are called Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., where I have been doing a bunch of guest spots recently. So you can go check all of those out, where we're looking at the recently wrapped up Marvel series What If. And I love it just about as much as you expect for me to love it, which is a lot. If you like the music that I'm really talking on top of right now, head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character. Alright, I know this is the spot where there would normally be an outtake, but I don't want it to be an outtake. I'm going to make it a thing that I'm recording especially for this. So, yes, I have told some people there was going to be a double release today on this. Time kind of got away from me, and by that I mean the cats were really cute and I was petting them. So, the extra episode is... Actually, let's put it this way. If I wake up early enough, because I'm a crazy person that wakes up early, then maybe I'll get the episode out early enough and you'll never notice that there was only one when this one came out. Otherwise, if that doesn't happen, it'll be out as soon as I can get it out. I don't really care about release dates on this because I'm not even taking this yawn out because this is how serious I want you to be and how much you know I'm not messing with this. I want to get the other planned episode release out as quickly as possible because I think you're really going to enjoy it. And, you know, your reward for listening through this whole podcast is getting to know that there's an extra episode coming. Eventually, I would say Wednesday at the latest, but hopefully not that long. All right, cool. See y'all later. Or not, because this is a strictly audio relationship we have going. So I actually don't know what to do. I'm just going to stop the recording now.